And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Really?
Yep. That's me.
All day?
All day and half the night.
Twice on Sunday?
Yeah. Hey, our sponsor this wonderful Sunday afternoon is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Right now you can get some great deals on some John Deere tractors up there. Go up and see them. They've also got the Honda generator line and the Steel Power Products line. So they've got it all going on up there. Give them a call. 226-9226, or you can get them on the web. Did I give the address? 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Nice.
Yeah. So what's going on today?
Oh, today? Well, we had so much fun talking about home defense last week. And we in the studio, all four of us, we decided we wanted to know more. We needed more information. So kind of felt like we spent a couple hours with Mr. Friedman, and then, bam, it was over, and it's like, oh, barely got through anything. So he was kind enough to take another chunk out of his Sunday.
Take another swipe at it, huh?
I was going to make another run at it since, you know, I'm sure you've heard enough shows about the election and, you know, all that. And
isn't there a virus going on, too,
and then,
or something?
Oh, stupid virus.
A pandemic.
So we have stupid virus, and we have masks, and we have, you know, all that other unpleasantness. But, you know, the funny thing is, since we're all in our homes right now, it would make sense to zoom in and get some focus on home defense, you know? Kind of makes good sense. A lot of us were out all the time, and we don't spend a lot of time in our houses, but now we do. So it's a good time to take a look at what you have going on. I ordered myself some red nightlights.
Yeah?
Yeah, you're going to have red nightlights here
soon. Oh, boy.
So those are en route, and hopefully he'll kind of go through a couple of those really just easy fixes for your home security, things that you can do yourself. So our guest is Mr. Peter Friedman. We've done a bunch of shows with him over the years, and he is really an expert on Islam and the Quran. So if you look on wethepeopleradio.us, you will see a tab up top that is marked Islam. A lot of those shows are his. He also gave us a really hot lead on an amazing book on that same topic, and that is under our suggested items. And the book is called It's All About Muhammad. And it's basically the biography of Muhammad. Very interesting.
Great
so
read.
For those of you who don't want to read the Quran and don't want to become an expert on that, you might want to just become an expert on Muhammad, because once you know about that, really, really illuminating. And I guarantee you, you don't know the story. You will read it and just be blown away. So that is worth looking into. So for the purposes of this program, Mr. Friedman's been instructing firearms for over 50 years. His expertise is mainly in handguns. All calibers. He's an NRA Life member. He's been an NRA member for 45 years, also a founding member of Oath Keepers. And he's a U.S. Navy small arms instructor, reserve deputy sheriff, reserve deputy sheriff pilot. He is in the sheriff's posse in Contra Costa County. He's an instructor for the community emergency response team. And he's worked, I don't know, he's with the FAA for like a zillion years. He's been a pilot for a really long time. We've done some really fun shows on the FBI with him. So I would encourage you, if you've got a little time on your hands, as I think a lot of folks do because we're trapped inside, you might look down through some of the shows. I think they're really, what was the funny one about my time in the FBI? that was we did that February of 2018. I cannot believe it was that long ago, but that was a funny show.
That was a good show.
Everybody still talks about that, the gun that fell in the toilet. And just to be clear about it, that was the FBI's gun, not Peter Friedman's gun. But he did live long enough to mock them about that. So anyway, it's just fun for everyone. So I don't know where we're starting today, so I'll kick it over to you. How's life in the Friedman household today?
Well, it's pretty good so far. Nothing untoward has occurred, but, you know, the day is young.
It's still time.
Plenty of time.
Plenty of time. Who knows what's going to happen? I thought what I would do today, since I, you know, have been doing these in-home courses on home defense and everything, I am fascinated by the fact in as recently as 2 days ago when I did it in somebody's home, how ignorant people are in the state of California regarding firearm laws. And they either overestimate things or they underestimate things. So I thought maybe it would be really good today if we went through some sections of the penal code so that people were aware of exactly what the regulations are. And I think you're going to be very surprised. This is what's called black letter law. It's in the penal code. So somebody can't say, well, you know, you're not supposed to do this or you're allowed to do that. And then you look it up in the actual penal code section and they're completely wrong. And unfortunately, this runs the gamut from lawyers to law enforcement people who don't spend a lot of time actually with their heads buried in the penal code looking at black letter law. So I thought we would go through a few of these sections very briefly with the section numbers. People can look it up on Google if they want to, or I can download this sheet that I pass out as a handout during the course.
Ooh, that'd be
and
handy.
We can put it on the website.
Cool.
Okay, so let me start out with people and concealed firearms. If you go to section 25400 of the penal code in the state of California, and this also is a question, believe it or not, on the firearm safety certificate quiz. So anybody that has purchased a firearm at any time in the last, 20 years, they've had to answer this question and they still don't know what the exemptions are. So we're going to go through that. But 25400 basically states that any person is guilty of carrying a concealed firearm if they carry it concealed upon their person, any pistol, revolver, or other firearm capable of being concealed upon the person. Now, what's very interesting is that if you are, for some reason, unfortunately, found to be carrying a loaded firearm that is registered to you, the first offense is merely a misdemeanor. The second offense becomes a felony. Now, what's interesting is that I have been teaching these courses now for probably a generation. I've been a licensed concealed carry permit holder since 1979. And as long as it's properly concealed, I can tell you right now, I have never been questioned. Not even once. So that becomes very interesting when you think about it. So 25400 defines what a concealed weapon happens to be and that you are guilty of violating Penal Code 25400. In fact, if you are caught carrying a loaded firearm. Now, what's also interesting is that if you are carrying a concealed firearm and it is not registered to you, first time, that becomes a felony. This is why when sheriffs in the 58 counties in California issued concealed carry permits to people, that permit has to identify on it the make, model, and serial number, and it must be registered to the permit holder. On the other hand, again, I go back to the fact that it's only a misdemeanor if you're caught the first time. But here are exemptions. If you go to Penal Code 25600, this is going to fascinate everybody, as it does every time I do the course. I deal with a lot of people, especially ex-girlfriends, ex-wives, who wind up with restraining orders against ex-boyfriends, ex-husbands, or stalkers. I've had two in the last 2 months who essentially had no experience in firearms, were not able to get a concealed carry permit in the county where they live because of lack of training and various other issues. But let me read to you what 25600 says. It says a violation of Section 25400, which is the concealed carry violation, a violation is justifiable when a person who possesses a firearm reasonably believes that person is in grave danger because of circumstances forming the basis of a current restraining order against another person who has been found to pose a threat to the life or safety of that person who possesses the firearm.
Hmm.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So
let's let that soak in for 5 seconds. We'll do a short celebration of free enterprise, come right back. And our guest today is Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find all of this, including some really great PDFs that he's given to us to post, and also his website, FriedmanHandgunTraining.com. You can find that all on our site, too, at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Oh, hey, well, I guess that's the end of that.
That's the end of that, yeah. Okay. Peter, I have a question. When you say on a concealed carry permit, you have to list the guns you're carrying by serial number on that permit. Let's say husband and wife have the same guns on their each of their permits, but they're actually registered to one or the other. Is that a violation?
Yes, sir.
Oh, so they have to be registered to the person who's carrying them.
That is correct.
Oh, okay. Well, I know a friend who probably has to get
asking
that
for
fixed.
A friend.
Asking for a friend, yeah, I'll have to get that fixed.
But that's pretty weird because I know a lot of people, again, asking for a friend, Bill, who have the same, like husband and wife who have their same guns on each permit,
and they go and they clear the concealed carry background,
but the gun is only registered to one of them,
and they allow both of them to be on each other's permit. So is that's a violation?
Well, in fact, it is.
Okay,
because a gun can only be registered to one human being at a time.
Correct.
It cannot be registered to a husband and wife. It cannot be registered to a company unless it is a what's called a PPO or a patrol, company like an armed guard company.
Sure.
Where the company, in fact, has the firearms, and then the firearms are issued personally to the guards. And then under that circumstance, the guard's name is also on the company roster for that firearm.
Right.
But I doubt whether, the average person is ever going to encounter that. One of the other things, since you brought up the registration issue, which I find very interesting, is that I have run into a number of people who have inherited firearms from a father, from a grandfather, and they've not re-registered them in their name. Now, what happens here, unfortunately, in the state of California, let's say you have a firearm that your grandfather handed down to you. He's gone, and you get that firearm stolen. You're never going to get it back.
This is not registered
because,
to you.
Because it winds up in the law enforcement property building, and then you know, you go to reclaim it for some reason or another, and they look up the serial number and the registrant on that firearm, and you're not there. They're not going to give it to you. The other problem that you run into with registering firearms is that up until about, seven, 8 years ago, long guns, rifles and shotguns, were not required to be registered.
Correct.
Now, they are required now to be registered. So the problem is that if you have a rifle or a shotgun that was handed down to you through the family, and that gun gets stolen, or by accident you happen to leave it at the range, and I have had that happen, as a matter of fact, at one of my local ranges here, where some guy came up there and he had half a dozen different guns sitting on the bench, and then he went to leave, and he actually left one under a carpet mat, and then he came back to collect it, and we couldn't release it to him. And I was the chief range safety officer at the time. And I said, no. I said, you're going to have to prove that this is your gun. And he said, well, I brought the gun into the range. I said, no, that's not proof. And what I did was I contacted the sheriff's department, and a deputy came up and took the gun into his car, got in his little laptop computer, ran the serial number, and looked at the guy's driver's license and said, I can't release this gun to you. You're not the registered owner. And the guy actually, in fact, lost the gun.
Wow.
So there is, you know, there's stuff on both sides here.
Well, how
that you have to.
How would that work if you did have, say, a rifle or a shotgun that you'd had for 30 years? At the time you bought it, it was not required to be registered. It's never been registered to anybody. And it's stolen, you'll never get it back?
Well, hopefully you kept the record of sale. Because if you kept the actual receipt of the record of sale of that firearm to you, that is good enough to retrieve it.
Okay.
That makes sense. Okay, so just for the people who are not living in California with a K, is this pretty common through the 50 states, except for the places that actually recognize the Second Amendment as their concealed carry permit? Is this pretty common or more restrictive?
This is more restrictive.
Okay.
But then I'm going to go through the exemptions here,
okay,
which just surprise the heck out of people when they see them. So there's a bunch of exemptions, in fact, to Penal Code 25400, carrying a concealed firearm. And what I want to point out, though, right now about 25600 with a restraining order is it may not apply to a husband and wife who are estranged and they have a mutual restraining order against both of them. So it generally is going to apply by the one person who has a restraining order against the other person. Now, also, if you wind up with a restraining order against you, you are not allowed to be in possession of firearms. And it says that right in the preamble to the restraining order.
Well, you have to go turn them in. You've got to
turn them in.
Yeah, you have. If you have a restraining order, even if it hasn't gone to court yet, if it's a temporary restraining order, I know someone this happened to, vindictive neighbor, filed a restraining order, and this person has a lot of guns, hunts quite a bit, that kind of thing, had to take all their guns to a local gun shop and have them hold them. You can take them, I think, to the sheriff's office. There's multiple ways you can
or
do that.
Or transfer them to somebody else.
Yeah, but they have to be turned in, which was a huge hassle. And even on a temporary, I think I was told it was like $1,800 to go, get a lawyer, go to court, have to prove you didn't do what they said that you did. And so even though there was no, you know, it really was a non-issue, it was very expensive and a huge hassle.
Or you just wait till the restraining order expires. But generally, if it's a restraining order that involves
it was temporary.
Criminal intent, or something like that, and stalking, you're probably never going to get them back.
No, it was just a temporary filing. It wasn't the restraining order was never actually issued. It was a temporary filing, and they sent them the thing that said they had to take all their guns and give them to somebody else and on and on.
Well, it's just not the situation you want to find yourself in.
No.
Okay, so one other thing I just want to tell you is that don't make any mistake with 25600. It is not a permit of any kind. It is what is called an affirmative legal defense. So it's not a permit, okay? It's an affirmative defense so that when you get in front of the district attorney, you say, I was carrying this firearm because I have a restraining order against my ex-boyfriend who has smashed the windows of my car and sliced my tires and threatened me with grave bodily harm.
And it was going to take me three months to get my permit cleared through the sheriff's office.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, again, it's an affirmative defense. It's not a permit, okay, instead of actually getting a legitimate concealed carry permit. And then I get into situations where people, and we talk about the castle doctrine and what you can do in your own home. And I explain to them, well, like we talked about last week, the lady who had the barn, and she had horses in the barn, and she said, well, if somebody comes into my barn and I don't want them there, you know, can I use deadly force? And I said, no, unless they are a direct threat. So if they pick up a pitchfork and they start to come at you, that's a direct, imminent threat. Yes, you can protect yourself with deadly force. On the other hand, if they wander into the barn and they're just standing there, that is simple trespass.
Mm-hmm.
And what you need to do is call the police and tell them, hey, there's some moron standing here in my barn. Come get them, you know, and hopefully they will. The second warning that you give to a trespasser now constitutes criminal trespass, okay? It goes to the same effect if you go into a Starbucks. If you are a concealed firearm carrier and you walk into a Starbucks because Mr. Lewis, who owns Starbucks, decided he does not want firearms or uniformed police officers in Starbucks, if you go in there and they happen to see for some reason or they believe that you are carrying a firearm and they say, if you're carrying a firearm, you need to leave. Okay, that's the extent of it. It's a business. And you should leave. Because if they tell you the second time, now it becomes criminal trespass. Hmm. So businesses, private businesses, have the right and privileges of telling people they don't want firearms in there. Well, if the gun is properly concealed, who's going to know?
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of a two-edged sword.
It always goes back to that. If the gun is properly and if it's not properly concealed, then you know, brandishing a weapon and all sorts, you have all sorts of other problems.
Exactly.
Your concealed carry license is the least of your worries.
It just blew away.
Yep,
that is correct.
Yep, that's the smallest problem. We used to have a guy, he used to come to the tea party, and he had, I think it was the gun from Johnny Dangerously, you know, the one that could shoot through schools. It just was like the biggest gun I've ever seen in my entire life. And he always had it in a holster, but he had a bit of a disability, and so his gait was off. When he walked, well, his shirt would always ride up, and so it was like, he kind of always looked like, I don't know, maybe it's because I just saw it yesterday, but like Yukon Cornelius on... on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Right.
It's like, hey, Yukon Cornelius, your giant gun is out on the outside of your shirt. But, you know, God love him. There were several hundred people there, and everybody was like, oh, it's just him. You know, everybody knows it was a giant gun. It was kind of funny, but, like, okay, out in public, you're in deep trouble,
Idaho,
bud.
Not California.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I'm sorry. We have to take another quick break. We'll be right back. And if you didn't know that Yukon Cornelius proudly carried an open carry 45, you should go back and watch that little flick there. There's a lot of good material in there that's really politically incorrect.
Yes, it is.
Every year I watch it, and every year there's more stuff that's politically incorrect. It's really awesome. So show that to your children and grandchildren. So you're listening to We the People. We'll be right back. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire.
It's a lot of good stuff that used to be in our history and recent history.
Yeah.
We're going to endeavor to bring it all back. All right. So, Mr. Friedman, I think we've got a lot of us who need to run down to the sheriff's office and make some adjustments. How is it that they can issue us a concealed carry license, but they don't check the registered owner of the firearms we list?
No, they have to check the firearm that you're putting on a concealed permit.
Yeah, so how is it they just issued a permit last week with some firearms on that that are not
registered to the person on the permit?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, they're not really supposed to be doing that, and somebody screwed up, and if for some unknown reason you get stopped and you are the permit carrier and the firearm that you're carrying is not the one that's listed on your permit.
No, it's listed on the permit, but the registration is not mine.
Okay, well, all right, we're talking about two different things. Anybody who receives a concealed carry license, mm-hmm, or a concealed carry permit, CCW,
right,
in the state of California, per the Department of Justice in Sacramento, if you look at the actual form, the DOJ form has spaces for three firearms.
Yeah, here
by make, model, and serial number.
Right.
Now, what's interesting is I've got concealed carry permits for 38 states. And when I take a look at the other ones, that's not on there. All it says is concealed carry firearm. The one I have for Oregon states, I'm trying to remember now. Let me look. The one in Oregon just states concealed carry firearm. The one for Nevada says handgun, which in their definition is either a semi-automatic firearm or a revolver. California is very specific. They are very specific.
So if it's listed, maybe we just misunderstood this. If it's listed on your permit as a listed gun that you are licensed to carry, the gun doesn't necessarily have to be registered as it was purchased. Like if Bill buys a gun and I put it on my permit to carry, even though I'm not the registered owner, through the system, but it is on my permit, that's good.
Let's put it like this: that's a gray area, and you don't want to be the test case.
Oh, how unfortunate. Huh? Yeah. Interesting.
Well, definitely warrants a little bit of investigation for sure.
Mull that over. Yeah, we're up here. We're allowed to have five. five firearms on our permit.
Well, there's space. It's a standard DOJ permit. In Contra Costa County, for example, not only do you have to carry the DOJ permit, but Contra Costa County only allows two firearms on their issued card. So I've got a card with my name, address, and photograph on it.
Oh, wow.
And on the back, it lists what Contra Costa County has authorized me to carry.
Nice. And your district attorney doesn't.
Model and serial number.
And your district attorney has chosen not to prosecute looters if they actually needed the stuff they stole. So,
let's not even get into.
So obviously, the priorities in Contra Costa County are like.
Yeah, I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, so let me move on here if I can. If you go to Penal Code 25605. It says that Section 25400, in other words, violation of carrying a concealed firearm without a permit, shall not apply to any citizen of the United States or legal resident over the age of 18 years. Any citizen of the United States or legal resident. I mean, somebody with a green card over the age of 18 years. Now, any citizen of the United States or legal resident over the age of 18 years who carries either openly or concealed anywhere within the citizen's or legal resident's place of residence, in other words, their home, place of business, and this is the kicker, or on private property owned or lawfully possessed by the citizen or legal resident, any handgun. So in other words, if you have a 4-acre spread and you're out there somewhere on your spread outside the home and you are threatened by somebody who comes onto your property, even though it's not inside your home, you may lawfully defend yourself with a concealed firearm.
Mm.
Most people are not aware of that. Now, that's why during the course that I teach, I explain to people, like the lady with the stable, there has to be an imminent threat, otherwise it's simple trespass. So in other words, if somebody, you're out there in the back 40, and somebody happens to come onto your property and they do not pose an imminent threat, they are guilty of simple trespass and you can't shoot them. But again, it also applies to a temporary residence, which can be an RV, or it can be a tent at a campsite, or while you are out hunting. Most people don't know that. That's part of a hunting license. If you have a current hunting license and you are out hunting, you may carry a concealed firearm.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of this stuff here that just gets by the wayside. And then I have other people who have come to me, a lot of elderly women, as a matter of fact, who live alone, and they come to me to get a permit to purchase a firearm. And Section B of 25605 says that no permit or license to purchase, own, possess, keep, or carry, either openly or concealed, shall be required of any citizen of the United States or legal resident over the age of 18 years. So it's not like Illinois or New Jersey or New York, where you actually have to get what's called an FOIA card to permit you to purchase a firearm. There is no requirement other than the firearm safety card quiz, which, and I've been issuing those for years, and I have never found anybody that's missed more than 7. You're allowed to miss 7 out of 30. You know, and if you've ever taken that test, I mean, you have to have an IQ of about 50 to fail it.
But you do have to do the background. You do have to do a federal background check, don't you?
Pass that.
Well, you have to go through the NICS system, yeah. Now, I tell you, since you brought that up, that's something very interesting. When you go and you register the firearm and you do the DROS, the dealer's report of sale on the computer, or you manually fill out the form, whichever it happens to be at the time, and you answer the 11 questions. Question number one, are you the actual purchaser? Is yes. The next 10 questions are all no, or they should be. And then that goes immediately into the national firearms system database, and the gun store will know within less than an hour whether you are a prohibited person. In California, the 10-day waiting period was put into law as a cooling-off period so that somebody who wants to get into or finalize an argument with somebody else can't walk into a gun store, buy a gun, an hour later go out and do damage with it.
Mm-hmm. But if they already own a bunch of other ones, it makes little to no sense that there's a 10-day waiting period. You have, like, you know, 6, 7, 10, 40 guns at home, and you're going to go buy another one, and you have to have a 10-day waiting period because you really just want to shoot them with that one?
For each one, you got to wait 10 days.
Yeah, it just seems totally stupid.
And if it's a retail sale, you can't buy more than one new gun never registered before, except every 30 days.
Yeah, again.
Now, you can buy all the used ones you want. You can walk into a gun store and you can buy 5 used guns right now, wait the 10 days, and then go pick up all 5 at the same time.
Oh, they just can't be brand new?
No, they cannot be brand new. Any firearm sold at retail, you got to wait 30 days before you can buy the next one.
I realize the people.
Let's take a really quick break.
Let's leave it as a cliffhanger. But we definitely need to know. And just in case people think we're stupid, we do realize the people who make these laws typically don't own firearms and know nothing about how they work. So sometimes that's evident in the rules.
There has to be, when you pick up the firearm, there has to be an affidavit that gets signed. That the person to whom you are releasing that firearm has demonstrated the proper safe handling of it, loading it, unloading it, disassembling it for cleaning, putting it back together. And there's an actual affidavit form that has to be signed by the person releasing the firearm and the person they are releasing the firearm to.
Hmm. So for all those people who think that everybody's just running out getting guns and just, there's no rules.
No, that's nonsense.
Yeah, that's nonsense. We hope this show stands in stark contrast to what you've always been told. And for those of you who own firearms, we're sorry that your head's exploding because this stuff's all super frustrating. But we will be back with our guest, Peter Friedman, always full of information. You can find all the info about the show and hit the PDFs that he has posted for us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Seems everything I buy these days has got a foreign name. From the kind of car I drive to my video game.
I got a Nikon camera, a Sony color TV.
But the one that I love is from the USA.
Boots and faded jeans, a homemade sandwich, a half a jug of tea. Average Joe, average pay, same old end, same old day. But there's nothing wrong with a hard hat and a hammer, kind of glue that sticks this world together. Hands of steel and cradle of the promised land. God bless the working man.
Exactly. Okay, so back to Bill's cliffhanger.
What was it?
It's your cliffhanger.
Well, we're talking about registration and things like that, but
yeah, what about
let me
the
move on.
Well, what about the supposed gun show loophole? To me, I don't know that there is one, but people are always saying, oh, I can go to a gun show and buy a gun and walk out with it.
That's absolutely untrue.
Correct. That's okay. I'm glad you said that, because that's what I've always...
Someplace else you might be able to.
Hmm?
In some other state that might be legal.
Well, it's definitely not in California, right. But for example, if you were to go to Idaho, and you could have two residents of Idaho, and one resident wants to sell a shotgun to the other resident, and they're both residents of Idaho, there is no background check required on the receiver of the firearm.
Hmm.
Okay.
But so, we're talking about California. That's also the same that is true in Arizona. There's a couple of other constitutional carry states. I'd like to just keep this within California.
Sure.
Okay, here's another one that's very interesting. This is also a question that's on the firearm safety card quiz, and it has to do with the transportation of firearms and concealable firearms in a vehicle. It's Penal Code 25610. 25610. And this is really interesting because it starts out section 25400, and that's a violation of the concealable carry law. Section 25400 shall not be construed to prohibit any citizen of the United States over the age of 18 years. Notice it does not say or legal resident. So in this particular case, it says section 25400 shall not be construed to prohibit any citizen of the United States over the age of 18 years from possessing, receiving, owning, or purchasing a firearm, from transporting or carrying any pistol, revolver, or other firearm capable of being concealed upon the person, provided that the following is complied with. Number one, the firearm is within a motor vehicle and it is locked in the vehicle's trunk or in a locked container in the vehicle. So if you look at the safety card quiz, the quiz question says, well, am I in compliance with 25400, for example, if I lock it in the glove box? And the answer is no, it's false. The firearm must be locked in a vehicle's trunk. That means a sedan with a lockable trunk, not a truck,
right?
Not an SUV, not a minivan.
Okay.
It's in the vehicle's trunk, which means that you can take the firearm and just put it in the trunk without it being a locked container of any kind, and you're legal, or in a locked container in the vehicle. Now, what's interesting is that this penal code does not say the material of the container. So if you go on your website to the Home Defense and Basic Handgun PowerPoint that I had you put up there, it will show you that you can actually have a concealable firearm in a soft side bag, providing you can lock the bag.
Mm.
Now, granted, somebody could take a razor blade and slice the bag open and take the gun.
Yeah, that seems kind of obvious.
But there is nothing, nowhere, except in the TSA regulations for transporting a firearm in an aircraft, is anything referred to as the container has to be metal, or it's got to be fiberglass, or it's got to be whatever.
Sure.
Now, this is a real problem.
Hey, Peter, before we run out of time, I have somebody on the line who has a question for one of the things that you just covered. We don't usually do a whole bunch of call-ins, but Patrick isn't a flake, so thought it was, not to demean the other people who might call, but at least we know he's not going to, you know, talk about flying saucers. So, Patrick, fire away.
Well, just a couple little minor tweaks to what the gentleman was saying. So, first, for buying handguns in the state of California, it's only one new handgun in a 30-day period. So it's not guns, it's a handgun in a 30-day period. Also, if we have used handguns, that still falls under the one in 30 days. It's treated just like a new handgun. Only a consignment would be exempt for the 1 in 30 days. So just a little bit of difference there. Uh-huh. Also, I'm a licensed gun show producer, and for any long guns from non-dealers inside the show, there is no 10-day waiting period for long guns over 50 years old. So that is kind of the loophole that they're talking about. But also, many other states have no waiting periods, and they're exempt from background checks in certain states. Here in California, for modern firearms, non-serial and relics, there's going to be a 10-day wait. So just a little bit of tweaking on some of that information is all.
Oh, okay. Well,
thanks for that.
That's good to know. I didn't know there was a 50-year deal.
Yeah,
50 years. And so every year, right now it's 1970, long guns, 1970 or older, sold by individuals, not dealers, but individuals, they can leave the show the same day. So that is a bit of a loophole.
Huh. All right. Huh. Well, thanks for that, Patrick.
And that first weekend of March.
And he's absolutely correct. I just didn't want to get too far into the weeds.
And then,
you know, because
and then hold on one second.
The
first, what did you say, first week of March?
First week of March, Reading Gun Show at the Holiday Inn. So hopefully if all goes well, we're going to have a great show first week of March.
Nice. Okay.
Great. Thanks
well,
for
thank
that.
You guys. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
And again, Patrick is absolutely correct. I just didn't want to dig too deep down into the weeds because this stuff is hard enough to understand in the first place. I have a Class 3 CNR license myself, and any firearm that is over 50 years old, manufactured over 50 years, I can walk into any gun store anywhere in the United States and with my Class 3 license, sign a copy of it, give it to them, and leave with the firearm. But he is also correct about the 30-day waiting period before you buy another gun. That applies to handguns, not long guns.
Perfect.
And as far as new and used, what's the thinking behind only one new every 30 days versus used?
But you could buy some consignment guns, not just used, consignment.
Okay. And he's also correct about the consignment, for example. If a gun dealer purchases a gun outright from somebody who walks into the store, that gun has to go into their inventory. And that gun now, because it's in their inventory, is subject to that 30-day period. If, on the other hand, I walk in and I say, I want to put this gun on consignment and then make a deal with the gun dealer, he's going to get a commission for
selling it, but he never owns
the sale
it.
And displaying the gun, you can buy as many consignment guns as you want.
Yeah, because it's being transferred. It's basically
a
transfer.
It's a paperwork issue.
Uh-huh. Oh, interesting. So bottom line is if you're out there and people have told you that buying guns in California is just, you know, there's no controls on these things, you should probably have your tongue ripped out. So anyway, we'll be right back. Our guest is Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.